Welcome to the North Shore Vineyard audio podcast. I'm Crispin Schroeder, pastor of North Shore Vineyard. Today on the podcast, we feature a message from a special guest who stepped in at the last minute when I found myself in the hospital last week with some heart issues. Jim Holland is going to be delivering a message on perseverance through times of trouble. Jim Holland is one of the associate pastors at the Kenner Vineyard, and I'm really grateful that he offered to help out in this time of need. Really good message here. If you need to know any details about what I was going through last week, you can check out on my blog, My Life as a Wrestler, crispinschroeder.blogspot.com. Other than that, we're going to go ahead and head over to the message. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check us out on the web, northshorevineyard.org. Now, off to the message.
About 2 years ago, I was walking in an example of pure grace. I stepped in a hole, and I destroyed my left ankle and had to be on crutches for a long time. And it was really weird. Was immediately, like that day, right after I did that, Crispin flew over the handlebars of his bike and busted his shoulder. He's trying to outdo me. You see this? And so we come walking into the church to our staff meeting a few days later, and I'm on crutches, and he's all got a sling. We look like something out of the Revolutionary War. We're all banged up. So then, to rev this up a little bit, about a year later, my appendix nearly burst. I had to go to the hospital and have surgery, and it was a big deal. And so I'm like, all right, Crispin, what are you gonna do now? So he has a heart attack, and now I'm thinking, I don't know what to do after that. So, and it was kind of funny, really, honestly, it was like a week ago, Crispin and I were having breakfast, and there was bacon involved, just so you know. And Crispin said, hey, I really want you to come up and speak sometime, up at the church. And I was like, man, I'd love to, we just got to make it work out. I didn't know he was going to go to this. All you had to do is ask. I would have come. I'm just saying. One thing I do know about Crispin is, this is not going to stop him in any form or fashion. I mean, if I know anybody that lives, it is Crispin. I mean, he lives, and I've always watched him and enjoyed just how he attacks life. And I've learned from him the meaning of perseverance. I mean, Crispin does not stop, and if something's not working quite right, he is going to go after it until it is done. I've never seen him quit anything. I've never seen him even slack off on anything. And so I just want to take a few minutes today. And I know you guys have been in a series. I just want to talk a little bit sort of outside that series just about the Christian idea of never giving up. Now, if I ask you and you're honest, how many of you would say, I have given up on something major that I probably shouldn't have? How many people quit? Yeah. It was really weird. A few years ago, if you remember Jerry Falwell, he said something I thought was really odd. It kind of offended me at the time. But then as I thought about it, I thought maybe there's a little truth to it. He said, there's one pervasive, ongoing characteristics of most Christians. They quit. It's like things get hard and they quit. God doesn't speak to them and they quit. Life doesn't go the way that they think that it should. And they quit. And he said, if I could do one thing to change something about, one characteristic about followers of Jesus, don't ever quit. And that really stuck with me. And I was thinking about the idea of quitting, it just means basically to stop something, to discontinue an activity, to cease whatever you're doing. And there's an interesting verse in Deuteronomy, and this is what it says in Deuteronomy 20. It says, today you are going into battle against your enemies. Do not be faint-hearted or afraid. Do not be terrified or give way to panic before them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to give you victory. I mean, that in a nutshell explains our life and how we're supposed to attack life. Because it's not us doing the fighting. It is, in fact, God who is doing the work. I think sometimes that it's our job, more than anything, to show up. That if we show up and faithfully trust God, he is going to make it happen. And really, failure only happens when we quit. And I have an intern who has this huge fear of failure, and I pick on her all the time and just give her a really hard time. And she's so afraid she's going to fail and let me down. And I even told her last week, I said, hey, listen, the only way that you really fail is when you give up. Because as long as you show up, God's going to work. Redemption's going to happen. The kingdom's going to break in. And so for us, perseverance happens simply because we trust that God is going to accomplish what he wants to accomplish, whether we are involved or not. And when we're involved, when we're engaged, then we get to be a part of what he's doing. And so when he asks us, hey, I've got something I'd like for you to try, as long as we say yes, he's going to make it work. The burden is on him to make it successful. It's not on me, is it? Because as this verse in Deuteronomy said, God's the one who does the fighting. God's the one who makes it happen. And so if you're like me, a lot of times I have quit on things in my life. I've quit on God. I have quit on tasks that he's given me because I somehow think that I don't possess the abilities or the skills to do this. I quit because I think I'm not good enough. And when I do that, I remove God completely from the equation. Do you see how that works? I'm basing this totally on my own abilities. Now, there's this great book. It's called Crazy Love, if you want a really amazing book. It's by a guy named Francis Chan. And he says this in here, if I can read a little bit to you. He said, there's this perplexing command, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. You heard that before, right? I stopped when I read that, and I asked myself, do I really rejoice? Am I a rejoiceful person? I mean, when the saints score, yeah, I rejoice, right? Okay, I'm just making sure. But in other things, when God's working, do I really rejoice? I was in seminary, and it was the weirdest thing. We're in chapel one day, and they're talking about, the president's up, and he's talking about how we had this donor who gave $1.5 million to the seminary today. And everybody stood up and was like, woohoo! And then a little while later, someone stood up and said, in our class yesterday that we were doing, we do this night class, and in this class we had 18 people who decided for the first time to give their lives to Jesus, and everybody in the place went, amen. And I thought, wait a minute, we are doing something backwards here. Where is the rejoicing? And so he brings this verse out. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. And he says in the book, he says, you'll notice that it doesn't end with, unless you're doing something extremely important when you don't have time to rejoice. He says, no, it's a command for all of us. And it follows with the charge, do not be anxious about anything. He says that came as a pretty staggering realization to him. But what I realized next was even more staggering. When I am consumed by my problems, stressed out about my life, my family, my job, I actually convey the belief that I think the circumstances are more important than God's command to always rejoice. In other words, I have a right to disobey God because of the magnitude of my responsibilities. Now, that wouldn't hurt me. Because especially in ministry, but just in life, sometimes we feel like what we're dealing with is so big. I don't have time. How can I rejoice when the car payment is past due? When they're about to turn off the electricity? How can I rejoice when my boss is down all over my neck and I have to work 60 hours a week? How can I possibly rejoice? And he says, worry implies that we don't quite trust that God is big enough, powerful enough, or loving enough to take care of what's happening in our lives. He says, stress says that things we are involved in are important enough to merit our impatience, our lack of grace toward others, or our tight grip of control. He says, basically, these are two behaviors that communicate it's okay to sin and not trust God because the stuff in my life is somehow exceptional. Why are we so quick to forget God? Who exactly do we think we are? In James, there's a fantastic verse that kind of touches on this. It's in James chapter 1, and it says this. I'm sure you've probably heard this. It says, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. When troubles come, think of it as an opportunity for joy, because God is doing something. He doesn't want us to stop. He doesn't want us to give up in the middle of it. Now, way, way back in the day, back a long time ago, I taught advanced life saving for the Red Cross. I'm sure you're looking at me going, yeah, obviously. But I did. And way back in the day, we taught heavy duty life saving. So when you got in the water, we had to know that you, if you were in the water with a drowning victim, could get a hold of them and pull them in. And so if they were totally just out of their mind and overpowered you, you could handle it. So we had fun. We would take these lifeguard candidates out into the water, and basically we would jump on them, grab them, wrestle them, hold them underwater till they were just about to die, and then let them up to see how they would handle it. They had to be ready, right? They were going through the fire. And I remember one time we were doing this, and we had this deal where we were in a lake. We got in a circle. People would swim out in the middle of the circle, and about 10 people would splash the candidate and kind of lurch at them. And one of us, he didn't know who, would jump on him, and with all the love in the world, try to grab him and see how he would handle it. Well, we're out there, and we jump on this one guy, and he just panics. He goes, "Nope, I quit." And I remember what this one guy said. He was my assistant. He said, "You don't get the option of quitting." And he jumped on him. And then everybody jumped on him. And we were thinking, no, when you're out in the water with somebody like that, you don't have the option to quit. And the same is true as we're following God. It's really not our option to quit. I guess the truth is, the most we ever do is put it on pause. We put life on pause, because if you ever quit something, God has a weird way of bringing you back to that situation, to that circumstance. Somewhere down the line, you will revisit it and have an opportunity to make the right decision again. I mean, I worked with young people for about 20 years, and I would see teenagers and sometimes adults and sometimes parents who had real problems with authority. And as soon as an authority kind of gave them a direction, they would rebel and they would argue. And they would bolt. They would be gone. And I could see this pattern in their life. They would get kicked out of school because they had problems with authority. They would get fired from jobs. And they would get fired from the next job and the next job and the next job. And they wondered why everybody was against them. And in reality, God was trying to work out something in them. And they had to revisit the place where they put learning and growing on pause. And so as bad as stopping is, pause can almost be worse. Because rather than just saying, "God, I'm not going with you," it's saying, "God, I want to control you. I want to control the circumstances." And I got to tell you, God is not one to be controlled. He has a plan. And he has a plan for you and me, and he's trying to get us through something. When I quit, I'm basically saying, "God, I don't trust your ability to equip me." And when God speaks to us and says, "I have something for you to do," and we say, I don't want to do that. It's saying, "God, I don't trust you enough to protect my reputation. Somebody might think something crazy of me." Now, you guys, I think you've been talking about community and doing life with people, right? Is that what you've been talking about? Well, one of the really interesting things about this quitting thing is, sometimes God will put someone in your life that he wants us to connect with, us to love with, us to show the kindness of God to. And we get so aggravated, irritated, annoyed at them because they just drive us crazy, right? Okay, honestly, anybody drive you crazy? I'm telling you, the people who drive you crazy, probably God is putting them in your life for a reason. Let me say that again. The people who drive you crazy are probably put there by God for a reason. But most of the time, we get tired of it and we're like, "I am done with you." And it's usually right at the moment when they need us the most. What we're doing is we're putting them on pause to make our lives a little more comfortable. When I was a teenager, I was running from God. Man, I was running from God. You have no idea how, like, anywhere I could run that was not God, that's where I was going. And there was this guy named Greg. who I knew to be not just a Christian, but a follower, a devoted follower of Jesus. But he wasn't terribly religious about it. He just loved God. And for some reason, he decided to befriend me. I did not want him as a friend. He did not drink. He didn't do the things that I did. And I did not want him as a friend. And the more I would push him away, you know what he would do? He would just come after me even more. And he never tried to fix me. He never tried to teach me. And I was really horrible to this guy. I mean, I made fun of him. They would have a Bible study, and I would like, you just don't even want to know the things I would say to them as they were coming out of the Bible study. And he still would be my friend and want to do things with me and for me. I intentionally tried to push him away, and he never gave up. And after over 2 years, one day he came over to my house. He's like, hey, you want to go do something? And I finally just said, why won't you leave me alone? What is it about you? It's like, you're this Christian guy. I'm not. We have nothing in common. Why are you trying to be my friend? And he said, because God loves you, and so I love you. And all of a sudden, we started having a different conversation. As hard as I tried, he would never put me on pause. As hard as I tried to push him away, he never said stop. I mean, that's persistence. That's perseverance. And so I asked myself, who am I persevering towards? Can you say that? Who am I persevering towards? Who are people in my life that I am trying to love, and even when they don't want me? And so there's an Applebee's right by where I live and where I work. And they're, let's just say that we've gotten to know all the people that work in Applebee's. And when we come in, they all come over to our table. And there's a whole big group of us. They all come over to our table. Hey, how you doing? And they got to know us long before they knew that I worked at a church, and my intern worked at a church, and this was a church group. And we got to know them, and we knew where they went to school, and we knew their names, and we tipped them very well. And we just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And this past week, one of them said, so would your church let somebody like me come? It's a girl. She had tattoos and piercings. And I was like, I showed her my tattoo. It's like, I work there. Sure. So this morning, she's supposed to be there. Perseverance. I'm not going to give up. Even at times when I cannot exactly see what God is doing. Even if I've been given a direction, but I've not been given specific map points. Now, those of us who live in the modern world of GPS, we don't really understand maps and compasses. But if you understand a compass, has everybody seen a compass? You know what a compass does? Compass points you in a direction. It's like, go this direction. A map says, here's where you are. Here's how you get there. Go this way. We always want a map. Show me where to turn left. Show me where to turn. Show me where to stop. GPS is the same way. You know, tell me. You've got the little voice, the little English woman on mine. And she's like, turn left. And then when I go off the course, she just gets really angry with me. She's like, where are you going? But you know what? God does not give us a map. He doesn't give us a GPS usually. He's like, go that way, and we'll figure it out as we go. As long as you're going in that direction, we'll get there. Occasionally, he gives us little places on the map, but mostly it's just go that way. And as long as we keep going and don't stop, don't give up, it's amazing the journey that we will have and the people that we will encounter. And you know what? It's overcoming the tough things. It's overcoming the moments when I don't hear God, but I know who I'm supposed to be. It's overcoming my own failures. It's even overcoming what I perceive to be God's failures that makes me who I am. When I think God has totally dropped the ball, he's totally abandoned me, but I keep going, that's when I find out who I really am. There's this really cool verse in Job. Job's having a typical Job day. In Job 23, he's expressing his Jobness. And he says this. He says, but if I go to the east, he, talking about God, he is not there. He seems frustrated. I'm looking for God, can't find him. If I go to the west, I do not find him. When he is at work in the north, I do not see him. And when he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. Most of us in that situation would say, I'm done. I quit. But listen to what he says. But he, God, he knows the way that I take. And when he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. I will come forth as gold when I've been tested and when I do not quit the test. It's a fascinating picture of the heart of God, that even when we're going through something hard, he's working it out. And I want to be the type of person that doesn't give up, that doesn't quit, that doesn't stop. And you know, for a lot of my life, I was not that person. But I'm learning that all of those hard opportunities, those hard moments, those are opportunities that God is using to forge me into something more useful, to stretch me spiritually so that I can see more than I think I know. God's fascinating that way, because he's trying to make us into something new. And most of us, you know, if we're honest, most of us, we want to stay the way we've been because it works. Or at least we're comfortable with it. Fascinating truth is God is not interested in our comfort. He is interested in life. He's interested in us experiencing life with him and experiencing him as the Father. I have a friend named Jerry. I'm going to talk about Jerry next week in the church at Kenner. I have a friend named Jerry, and when Jerry was 20, he was in seminary, in a Catholic seminary, and his whole life he felt like God had called him to work with youth, to be a youth minister. And so as a growing up Catholic, he did what he was supposed to do. He goes to a Catholic seminary, and while he's in Catholic seminary, he meets a girl. Girls are evil. I'm just kidding. He meets this girl. He falls in love. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And he drops out of seminary, and he basically puts everything God-related on pause. And marries this woman. They have kids, but becomes totally disconnected from God. Becomes totally disconnected from God's people because everything was on pause. Many years later, it's like 24 years later, he comes to me at a Vineyard church I'm working at. And we'd been talking about volunteering with teenagers. And Jerry comes up to me, and I'd never met him before. And at this point, he's about 48 years old. And he says, do you think I'm too old to work with young people? No. I was like, why do you ask? He's like, well, I just wonder. I'm like, you wonder what? And he tells me his story. He tells me about basically just leaving God and putting God on hold. And I said, let me ask you a question. Do you feel like God wanted you to marry this woman? He said, yeah. And I said, do you feel like God wanted you to go to Catholic seminary? And he said, I don't know. I never really asked that. I'm like, well, how did you end up there? He goes, I was supposed to go. Well, who said that? Well, all the important people. I said, but did you talk to God? Did God tell you to do that? And he said, no. I said, well, perhaps it's not necessarily that you missed a calling because of this woman. Maybe it's that you went down a path you weren't supposed to go, and because of that, you ended up putting everything on hold and became disconnected. And here's what I'm supposed to tell you. There's a wonderful verse in the Bible that says, the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. Do you hear that? God's gifts and his calling are irrevocable. The Message version, which I have not memorized, I should, it says it very beautifully. It basically says that God himself cannot take away your calling. He cannot himself take away your gifts. And I told Jerry that. And he began to weep because he thought he had completely turned his back on God. And I said, doesn't matter, because God's never turned his back on you. And so he kind of unpaused his life, and he began working with teenagers. And he became one of the most amazing youth workers, youth volunteers I have ever known in my life. He's now been doing it about 9 years. 2 years ago, his wife, Maria, they'd been married close to, I guess, 30 years. She developed a really horrible cancer. And all of a sudden, their lives sort of went haywire in dealing with this. And the last time I went up to Ohio and I visited Jerry, and I go over to his house, and there's food everywhere. I'm like, wow, there's food everywhere. Where'd that come from? Hundreds of teenagers had adopted them, and they were bringing them food. Every day, a different teenager, their family, would bring his family food. Every week, a team would come over and mow their lawn. Every week, people were coming over and serving this family. And you know why? Because he got back in the game. He unpaused his life. He got back on the right path. And the gifts and the calling are irrevocable. And God used his willingness to serve in a weird way. It came back to bless him when the time was right, when he needed somebody. And Jerry will tell you, as happy as he is, as amazing as it is to be where he is now, and God using him with young people, he will tell you he wished he would have never stopped. And so if he were here today, he would say, don't stop. When God tells you something hard, if you stop, then you're trusting in yourself. But real faith comes from knowing that God is the one who's doing the fighting, and that if we show up and we're obedient, he is going to make it work the way that he wants it to. If I can remember that every day, I'll see some life happen. You want to see some life happen? Don't stop. So that's all I have. Let me pray for us. And then, I don't know, are we doing anything? Who am I looking at? Oh, you're right there. Hi, Josh. If you would, just everybody close your eyes. And I feel like I'm supposed to pray specifically for a couple of people. If you have stopped somewhere in your journey with God and you're feeling like you have missed it, and you don't know if God will ever let you back, and you don't know if you could ever recapture that calling. If that's you, nobody else is looking. And if you don't want to raise your hand so I'll know how to pray for you. Okay. The gifts and the calling of God cannot be revoked. They are lifelong. They are eternal, not just in this life, but in the next life. Father, I ask right now that you would come on these people who have felt like they have missed it, like they said stop when they shouldn't have. God, first off, I ask that you would remove guilt, because guilt is not from you, God. Guilt is from the enemy. Just remove the guilt and whisper into their hearts the great joy that you have for them, God. Right where they are, despite anything they've done or haven't done, that just at their being, their life gives you joy. Let them know that right now, Father. And Father, as you set them free from what they think is a past failure, God, show them that you are so big that you already have plans to get them moving again. And God, show them the direction. Maybe not the map. Maybe not the GPS coordinates, God. Maybe not the turn-by-turn direction. Show them the general direction. And then, God, put people around them who will encourage them and push them on and say, it's not up to you to quit. It's not your option. You got to get back in there. And then, God, for all of us, show us the people that we're supposed to persevere to. The ones who are going to drive us crazy and show us, God, the moments when we feel like we should quit, that that's the moment we need to kick it in a little bit more, because that's the time that they probably need us the most and they need you the most. God, show us how to persevere with those people when we don't have time and when we take ourselves too seriously and we're too busy. And God, we lift up Crispin and his family to you. I know they trust you, God. They fascinate me how much they trust you. But I ask your protection on them. I ask for healing. I ask for clarity in what you're doing. And God, I am thankful that this happened the way that it did, and that it didn't happen further down the road in an unknown way. God, you're such a gracious God that you let this happen the way that it did. And so we see you at work in it. And God, let us see Crispin in the fact that he doesn't stop. Show us how to love them more and care for them more. And God, show us as a family how we're all in this together, God. Father, we love you with everything. Amen.